For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, the two familiar faces of Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, our usual cavemen. And gentlemen, we're joined by our first cave clergy.
Yeah, there we go.
We had to do a little bit of sweeping up and tidying up around the cave here. Yeah,
throw those old bones out, right?
We have with us today Father Christopher Roberts. Hello. Welcome, welcome. Yeah. He's become kind of a fixture here on Catholic Radio. We've had him here on Faith in Action. He's been here for a share-a-thon or two. And, you know, when it comes to the philosophy subjects, you know, we decided let's tap into the experts. Guys, it's your subject. Take it away.
Well, welcome, Father. It's great to have you. I know you and I had met during, I think, a recent share-a-thon.
Yes.
And I was really impressed, not only with your credentials, but I also thought that, you know, bringing you here into the Catholic Cave would be just a lot of fun because Mark and I love to geek out on philosophy. And I can tell that you're someone who also appreciates studying philosophy, theology. And so we've got a couple of things we want to talk to you about. But maybe for the sake of our audience, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I've been a priest now for a little bit more than 11 years. And I'm a pastor at St. Paul in Marion, Indiana, and Holy Family in Gas City. And I'm also finishing an STL, and God willing, the STD in Mariology at the International Marian Research Institute in Dayton, Ohio.
Well, that's fantastic. I know when I first became acquainted with those degrees, the STL and the STD, that one in particular, right, always gets a little bit of a grin and a chuckle because what's Father doing over there with that? But they actually pertain to sacred theology.
Yes. Licentiate in sacred theology and the doctorate in sacred theology. Everything in Latin is reverse.
Oh,
so the doctorate in sacred theology then becomes...
Right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
The other way around.
And I think that, you know, just as a quick side note, I think that might be one of the, especially here in central Indiana, that International Marian Research Institute is quite a gem. And it's not that far away.
It's
like two and a half hours maybe from here to Dayton?
Well, I guess it depends on the traffic.
Sure. Yeah, especially, it's about 8 hours this time of year here in Indy.
Yeah, I'd say about two.
Okay. And that's the only one outside of Rome, is it not?
That's right. It has probably the best English language Marian library in the world.
Wow. And you know what else is over there, too, that I also like that's on the second side, is the Air Force Museum.
That's a lot of fun.
That would be a great kind of like long weekend would be to see kind of both. And I also understand, what's your area of concentration? What's your thesis on?
Well, I guess I've gotten to the point where no one's going to steal it, so I can tell you.
Okay. or use veiled language.
Well, you might have heard of Father Frederick Faber.
Yes.
Faith of Our Fathers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a wideness in God's mercy. Sweet Sacrament, we thee adore. In addition to writing many, many hymns, he wrote about seven or eight books, and he was named by the Pope at the time Doctor of Divinity. So I'm going to look at some of his works and then try to connect them with Blessed John Henry Newman. So they were contemporaries.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
Friends, sometimes they had their disagreements. So it's looking at two different figures and their approach to Mary.
Oh, fantastic. And I think for our purposes of... at least one of the purposes for today's show was we, you know, in the contemporary culture, Father, there's all kinds of confusion about gender identity, male, you know, created male and female, or maybe we weren't created, right? Maybe I'm male because I say I'm male. And therefore I can switch it, you know.
Yes.
I can change.
Yes.
So you know, with your studies in Mariology, I thought that would be great to help us understand from Holy Mother Church's perspective, and some of the great theologians yes. that and saints you've been studying, you know, to help us better understand and grasp some of these concepts, given all the confusion, all the heated yes. disagreement at times that's out there in the culture.
Yes, exactly. Well, obviously, what you'll get in the culture is that thing we probably all dealt with in the playground was, it's a free country.
Oh, right.
Which yeah. the subtext is, I own myself. Right. Oh. I'm my own master. Mm. No one else is.
Yeah, I think nowadays they say, you do you.
Oh, that's another catchphrase.
Yeah, exactly. You. Yeah, you do you.
Yes. So that's where we're starting from, as in the ambient culture. The idea that I am my own Lord. So the Christian anthropology that Mary illustrates so well is, we see, first of all, in Jesus. He did not deem equality with God a thing to be grasped, but rather he emptied himself and took the form of a slave. That's that beautiful ancient Christian hymn that Paul reports in Philippians chapter 2. Okay, so he took the form of a slave. Now, what does Mary show us about that? Well, this is the exact same response she has when God reveals his plan for her. Behold, we say handmaid. The Greeks literally doula, I mean slave woman.
Yeah.
So it starts with a recognition that we aren't our own, that God has given us a gift of our bodies to do his will, right? That's what we were created for. And that might, here's the paradox. It's only through recognizing our creatureliness that we're truly free. Okay, so this is the difficulty we have with gender ideology, is the idea that I have total freedom to choose my gender, but I'm not free to live the life of a gift because I have to constantly recreate myself. Look at Bruce Jenner, right?
Yeah, which is exhausting,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Right. Every moment, right? Yeah. Every moment when we're the source of our own creation, when we fall into that trap, that's exhausting because you're right. Every moment of every day, I have to be actively making that happen.
Yes. Right. Yeah. You know, there was a great book that captured our culture well called The Culture of Narcissism. And it is. It's that impetus to have to recreate yourself. And I think this goes beyond just the kind of gender crisis where we're having now. You have to recreate yourself by, I think, stocking the images, creating a world around yourself to kind of reinforce your sense of self, because people have lost the idea of who they are. And as you said, Father, Christian theology points in numerous directions that we are ultimately creatures. We're ultimately creatures of God. That's where we find our identity. But if you lose sight of that, you have to constantly recreate your own identity.
Mm-hmm. We've gone back to, you know, the idea of person. You know, in the ancient world, the persona was the mask that actors wore that magnified their voice in the theater. It was something that they put on and took off. The Christian vision of person is, it's in us. It's the point of encounter where God loves us as we are. God loves us as we are, not the mask that we put on. And it's exhausting. It's really exhausting. Think about this. If we're constantly trying to keep the mask looking perfect, recreating ourselves. That's what Our Lady shows us. Her beauty, her blessedness comes from starting with, I'm just a lowly slave of the Lord. You've got a plan, God, for me, that's better than mine.
Yeah,
show me the way.
Yeah, and recognizing that and accepting that you know, out of humility and love and deference, right? Mm-hmm. It seems to me also, Father, that along those lines related to that, we have in the current culture, social media that allows, that seems to be, it seems almost like the perfect tool by which I can manufacture my mask and change my mask.
Yeah, I mean, you start off in social media with creating your own avatar, right? So, you know, depending on what platform you're on, you have to start by creating some sort of image of yourself
that's not really you.
That's not really you, exactly.
Right.
It's interesting to see the evolution, right? Because Mark Zuckerberg, he's a couple of years behind me at Harvard. And when we started at Harvard, we got the freshman Facebook. Right. We were called first year students because that was, you know, freshman was all
derogatory. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You were being oppressed when you were first.
But it was still the freshman Facebook. It was interesting to see, though. It was actually your face. Like, that was just so people could get to know you.
Yeah, yeah. Great.
But what we've seen now is Facebook is actually oftentimes a way to advertise the person you're not or the person you'd like to be, but you're not. And that's exhausting.
Yeah, exhausting and dangerous. I mean, there's a huge danger that when you lose sight of yourself, not only do you lose sight of your gifts, but I think it makes it very easy for you to kind of fill yourself up with the world, so to speak. So you lose sight of yourself as a creature, and you know, there is no such thing as a spiritual void. So what fills back in is often not good.
Tell you what, it's about time for us to take a short break. We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy right after this.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
It's not just a radio station, it's a ministry.
Catholic Radio Indy.
You guys just have no idea how much of a difference it makes.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell, and in the cave with my usual co-host, Mark Tuttle, Kent Blanford, our producers in here, and our special guest and special friend, really, of Catholic Radio Indy, Father Christopher Roberts.
Great to be here.
It's fantastic to have you. Hey, I wanted to, as we sort of begin this next segment, I was wondering, Father, I'm very interested in your thoughts around how, being a Mariologist, I think thinking about the Blessed Virgin Mary and all of her, qualities that she has. What are your thoughts there in terms of how we might better know, love, serve Our Lady? That might begin to offer a remedy or a pathway out of some of the morass that we find ourselves in.
Yes. Well, the great saying of St. Bonaventure, which is the motto of my institution, about Mary, never enough.
Fantastic. That might be my first tattoo.
The Latin is much more pithy. So how do we kind of overcome this almost obsessive recreation of the self? Mm. First of all, contemplating in Mary's life what it meant for her to give an unconditional yes to God. So just to contemplate Mary and to be formed and to think according to what we'd say her mind is. So what's the first thing she does after getting this great privilege of being the Mother of God?
She goes out and serves.
Mm-hmm. She says, let me fulfill my mission of being a servant by going out and serving my cousin Elizabeth. And when she is captivated by God's will, that's when the great things start happening. Usually in the vision of the person that we have, we're looking for the great things. I want the blessings. I don't want the obedience.
Right.
But she has the obedience first, and then when she walks in, this is not something we'll usually think of when we think of the visitation, but it's right there in Scripture. Blessed is she who believed that what the Lord promised her would be brought to fulfillment. She walks through the door. That's what Elizabeth says as John's leaping in her womb. So that, I think, is one, recognize that with obedience, with openness to God's will, then comes blessedness, or we might even call it happiness, right? Rather than seeking happiness through freedom, we find that by adherence to God's will, it's a gift. It's something that we receive. So that'd be one thing about Mary. I think one of the other things that we pick up twice in St. Luke's Gospel, it's the both the nativity and the finding in the temple. So with the nativity, obviously, you have the angels coming, the shepherds coming, and it says that Mary kept all of these things, pondering them in her heart. And you'll get the same thing after she finds Jesus at the temple at the age of 12. And he says, I must be about my Father's business. But here's the cool thing. If you look at the Greek, we can speak Greek in the cave?
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
So
we're not always going to understand it. But
so the devil literally means, it's diabolos. So it's just like you talk the word ball, that's to throw. Mm. The devil throws apart. But what we see in the Greek is when Mary ponders these things, she's literally throwing them together. So the exact reverse of what the devil does in terms of dividing. Mm. So when we are looking at the vision, our own self-identity, we get fragmentation, right? When we're not in this sense of obedience first, then blessedness, when we're seeking blessedness through freedom. So Mary is able to put everything together, right? Because now she's receiving and she's contemplating. She's pondering these things in her heart. Now for us, we're moving from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And I'm a pastor of two parishes, so I know the feeling.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember when the appointment walks in. Now, who are you again, and why am I talking to you? But she's able to put those things together because she's doing one thing. Mm-hmm. Let me do your will, Lord. That's the one thing that she's about. And then she's able to make those connections. Whereas the fragmentation comes from, what's my will? How am I going to shape myself, even my day? How am I going to recreate myself today? Well, then we feel like we're not connected, even to ourselves. That, I think, is Mary is the Saint Irenaeus says that she unties the knot of Eve's disobedience, and that's beautiful. The beautiful devotion Pope Francis will promote, Our Lady Untier of Knots, comes from that image. But we also see she crushes the head of the serpent through bringing together all of the wonders of God in her contemplation. And that's for us, how we are able to put all these fragmented parts. Sin fragments us.
Yes.
Mary shows us, let's bring it together through contemplation, contemplating these things in our heart. And relative to gender ideology, which is one of those things, people are always trying to think, well, how can I find myself outside of me?
Right, right.
Yeah. Or, I mean, what's the new look? What's
right, right.
What's my true self?
I think a big part of that is simply the fact that we have, as a culture, come down to not realizing, you know, I want to be who I am. It's, I want to be who culture tells me I should be.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, yeah. We're performing.
right.
for others constantly.
Yeah, all the world's a stage, but I don't think I like the role I'm in, so I'm going to pick up a different script and move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard that described as the absurd theater of the self, right, where I'm starring in my own show about me.
Right, but the director of that show is the world. Yeah, you're not the director. You've kind of lost the ability to be your own director. Mm-hmm. In that, it's an amazing contrast between, I think, two different conceptions of freedom, and I think it illustrates how, you know, this idea of complete unrestraint, that there's nothing, I have no responsibility, I have nobody to answer to but myself. That's how a lot of people would define freedom, but it's the exact opposite. It really is chains that the world has placed upon you.
Exactly.
I was going to bring up too, Father, the when it comes to human sexuality, something that's just, at least over the course of my life, and we has continues to sort of fade into the background is virginity. And so
virginity. Yes.
Yes. So, well, and it's, you know, we've heard, again, in the contemporary setting, what do we have? We have a hookup culture. We have this sort of, you know, freedom to, you know, engage in sexual activity and who I want, when I want, how I want, as long as, with the only boundary left is consent. And even that seems to be eroding with some of the other developments that are going on now with they have sex bots right now in Germany, where I was reading an article on this. It's shocking, right? So you can, they're human like robots that allow you. Yeah, it's horrible. They're human like, and there's a real brothel, and you go in and you will engage in sexual activity. But so that's horrible enough. But what I found even more shocking and repulsive is that these robots actually have a rape mode on them.
Oh gosh. Okay.
So that you can act out. So the depravity is way, way out there. So again, thinking about what's the antidote to a poisonous, you know, activity and mindset where that's sort of cutting edge technology, mm-hmm. That's being embraced.
Yes.
And then, but we're not even, we've lost sight of, or it's very obscured, what authentic human affection and love and intimacy and virginity. What's even the purpose of it? It seems like no one even, the purpose is to get rid of it as soon as one can.
In Anne Rice's novelization of Jesus's early years, and sadly Anne Rice left the church, but actually the novels she writes are phenomenal. And there's this discussion between Joseph and one of the relative, the fictitious characters, about Mary's virginity, not just in conceiving Jesus, but also in remaining afterwards. And Joseph says something to the effect, "How could I dare go where God has already claimed for himself?" Mm-hmm. And I think that idea of the personal consecration and giving, mm-hmm. that involves being the real romance. Mary is preserved from original sin so that she can give unfettered consent to God's invitation into this deep union of wills. Do we form ourselves to understand that the nature of love looks like that? Right? Between man and wife and our commitments.
Right, right.
The idea of consent as an adventure. An adventure. Or is it just simply what we have to do to stay out of jail or not?
Right, right, right.
the romance, and when you have the romance of marriage, and this is kind of Chestertonian, actually virginity is what makes the romance of marriage and married life interesting. because you're giving, one gives oneself completely to someone else. And when God, when Mary gave herself to God, we don't think of it, but in the first century mentality, it's clear to someone like Joseph, she belongs to God. How could I possibly even claim her for my own?
Right. Respecting that
the mystery of the person.
Yeah, and the promises. It seems too that, you know, we're not very good promise keepers at times either when it comes to again, either, you know, making the right kind of promises to each other. I think that's cohabitation is an example of a kind of shortcoming there.
Yes.
But then also within marriage, often the cause of divorce is a kind of failing to live out.
And people are trained in making those promises. I mean, feeling that, and then, oh well, you know, that's life. Got to move on.
Yeah, things change. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up where we need to take another break, but this leads to another question. So I want to raise the question. We'll take a quick break, come back. You know, this stems, I think, to something you got to earlier, Father, of our losing sight of our identity as creatures. We lose that creatureliness, and therefore we have nothing to give. You know, I think without a sense of identity, we have nothing to give to somebody else. So in a world where, you know, belief in God is becoming less of a thing, I guess, how do we communicate true identity as a creature of God to a world that even has a hard time believing in God? And so we'll raise the question and step away from the mic for a bit, take a quick break, and come back and talk about how do we get across the idea that we are all creatures of God.
And we'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
This station has been an inspiration.
Those moments of the Lord, it always makes my day better.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell and good friend of the Cave, Father Christopher Roberts. And we are talking about human anthropology, ultimately. That, you know, what is it that makes us human? And we've been looking at it through the lens of Marian theology. What kind of light does what the Church reveals to us about Mary, what does that reveal to the rest of us about who we are as human beings? And yeah, it's a great relationship and a great advantage we have as Catholic thinkers. We have this deposit of the Church's revelation from which we can then go and figure out the great philosophical questions. So in a world where there's less and less belief in God, how do we as Catholics, where do we start? How do we begin that conversation to where we can kind of help people realize that, no, your true identity rests in and is founded on this idea that you're a creature, you're created. You are ultimately not yourself, and your identity comes from something much greater than yourself. Where do we begin to try to communicate that to the rest of the world?
Well, as Americans, we're blessed with the Declaration of Independence, which, I mean, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that we are created with certain inalienable rights. So these are endowments. So I think that in American culture, we still have those echoes of this idea that some things are given to us, the most precious things that we have. Now, rights, I think that sets the bar way too low. What's the big thing we have now? We have the therapeutic culture. I'm always wanting to kind of get down to the bottom of things, find my true identity, and then be affirmed, right? So of course, we're all about affirming people. You know, if I identify as a 7-foot-tall Indian woman. You know, everyone's gotta say, well, that's great. That's wonderful.
Right.
You found yourself.
And there's that YouTube video that I think you're referring
exactly,
to.
Exactly.
Phenomenal, yeah. Yes. What if I told you I was a Chinese woman? What would you say then, Father?
Yes,
you
know? Yes. So we have that. I think our creatureliness is wonderful good news because it just doesn't give us rights. It gives us a voice that can speak of blessing and goodness. Now, what's a real concrete manifestation of that? I'd say, go back to the Song of Songs. I know that this is probably on the top of most people's biblical reading list, but the thing that's fascinating with this is you, especially before the liturgical reform, although you still see it in Sumerian feasts now, most of the language about Mary comes right out of the Song of Songs. It's this idea of the soul stands before God as fundamentally receptive or feminine, right? And Mary is the acme of being able to stand before God as receptive. Mm-hmm. And then it's a love story. And one of the lines that we have to be careful, the translation is a little tricky, especially with current sensibilities about issues of race. But let's go with a translation. It's I want to say it's chapter 1, verse 5. I am dark but comely, or dark but beautiful. And the fathers will look at this as creatures. We tend toward non-being. And that's the great breakdown, decay, the second law of thermodynamics. But God looks on our creatureliness and recognizes it as good or beautiful. So we talk about self-esteem, and we can't damage people's self-esteem. But ultimately, self-esteem is dependent on my vision of self, which is pretty fragile. That's why you need the safe spaces.
Right.
Right.
Mark's wearing a safety pin.
Yeah.
Just for you, Father.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned the feminine stance of the human soul. And so, you know, and this transcends gender, to use an awful phrase these days. but, you know, that feminine stance and that understanding of femininity that we do get from what has been revealed to us about Mary, we've lost that culturally. You know, I think a lot of the gender confusion, I think a lot of the feminist movement is an effort to eradicate the whole sense of the receptivity that femininity brings with it. So, especially as men, I mean, because I think we as men have a role in restoring the feminine. I know we started this whole conversation off to try to, I think, break off this idea of men claiming to be women, and now we're moving, I guess, philosophically a little bit. But how can we, particularly as men, go about trying to restore that idea of the receptivity of that real feminine vision of the soul?
Well, this is it's the paradox. I think on one level we all live it. That's the challenge for male spirituality, quite frankly, because males are called to receive God's grace in a certain passive way, but at the same time we're also called to image the initiation that comes from God the Father. So to be the one that kind of not just receives, but also gives.
Right.
And that's one element. How do we receive the feminine qualities? We live in a very activistic culture. It's all about accomplishments. We don't put a whole lot of value in service. We talk about, for instance, quality time versus just time.
Right.
So a lot of it is trying to downshift from this constant stream of activity And just being able to recognize that there's a value in just being okay. Mm-hmm. And I think women can really remind us about that. Really remind us about that, because they, in their bodies, they're designed to be with another life for 9 months.
Right.
And to nourish and to provide a...
Care for.
Yes, to provide an environment. And then, obviously, what comes after that. So how do we... One thing is to the exaltation of motherhood or recognizing the value of motherhood. I think it's either in 1984 or Brave New World where when a mother is a curse word. You can't say it.
Yeah.
That's a dystopia.
I think it's Brave New World, but that would be my hunch. But that's a whole nother, we could do a whole nother show on just on that book alone and how prophetic.
Yes.
That book has been.
But to affirm motherhood as something that is a calling. And then, of course, fatherhood is only meaningful in so far as you have motherhood.
Right.
the two go together. So that would be, in terms of recovering some of that sense, we have those real natural gifts. Nature, there's that natural sacrament, which is marriage, that John Paul II will allude to. And that can be a lot of times that the things that set us straight. Contemplating that, and obviously Mary reminds us that it's all about being receptive. I mean, the greatest dignity she had, the greatest dignity anyone could have, is to be the mother of God. St. Thomas Aquinas will say, by being the mother of God, she was raised into the hypostatic order.
Oh,
which means
yes.
It's very, theologians puzzle over this, but it's this idea that somehow she becomes a person who, while not part of the Trinity, is still in the same group.
Right.
She's like the honorary member. In some sense, we have to nuance that, but to recognize that motherhood as a real model and something to aspire to, something to value and preach, to contemplate as the highest. This is the highest any role anyone could play in the divine economy, to be the mother of God.
And I think that that's beautifully said, Father. I think that's also your point there also, I think, serves, I think, as a good reminder. I know sometimes on how much Catholics and the Catholic Church hold in esteem women and the feminine, right? The greatest saint of all is a woman, right? And the greatest of all God's creatures is a woman.
Yes.
And we often refer to, because of that receptivity, right, and the motherhood. Well, we talk about Holy Mother Church,
yes,
right, and the receptivity. And I think, you know, because sometimes the Catholic Church gets kind of beat up as, you know, unfairly and unjustly about, oh, it's a, you know, sort of this patriarchal kind of organization. Yes. And I think people can only make that charge if they're either, you know, intentionally or unintentionally really ignorant about how much we love and adore our Holy Mother, and how much we love and adore Holy Mother Church. It just seems that when we've removed the Blessed Virgin Mary from our contemplation, from our prayer life, from our devotions, then maybe it does look a little overly masculine, the church might. But that's only because we've removed the Blessed Virgin Mary from our understanding of the whole faith.
Indeed, and I think one of the biggest mistakes we can make is think that at Vatican II there was a desire to
downplay,
in any way, downplay Mary and her role in the church. The document on Mary actually becomes part of the dogmatic constitution on the church, the last chapter, and it's the interpretive key. And the If you ever listen to a great piece of music, classical music, it's the end that kind of brings all of the different themes together in a resounding way. And the whole council, and it's not a coincidence that Blessed Paul VI at the end of the council gave Mary a new title, Mother of the Church.
Mm. We need to take a break, and we'll be right back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
When you're tired of doing life alone, come back here. We enjoy the company. We hope you do too. Better together. Catholic Radio Indy.
I'll bet if you haven't done so already, you're going to be grocery shopping this week. If you happen to shop at Kroger and have a Kroger Plus card, Catholic Radio could get a percentage of almost everything you buy if you register your Kroger Plus card. It only takes a moment. Have your Kroger card ready and go to CatholicRadioIndy.org. Click on the Kroger link. Register your card just one time, and Catholic Radio will benefit every time you shop at Kroger's.
Anytime you get in the car, turn on the radio, you know that there's going to be something encouraging.
It's such an encouragement and enriching to my own Christian walk.
It brings me a great deal of peace.
I really am blessed whenever I listen.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. And Mark had to step out, and I believe he's tracking down some mastodons at the moment. So that can be a popular pastime here at the...
We all must hunt to live.
That's right. Well, we're here in this last segment. We've been speaking with Father Christopher Roberts. He is a pastor of two parishes. He's also finishing up or in the home stretch.
Yes.
Right. God willing, I'm highly confident he'll do it. His sacred theology licentiate and doctorate as well. And so he's a Mariologist. So we've been spending some time today in the Catholic Cave with Father sort of helping us understand the role of Our Lady and how she can help us better understand or act as an antidote to different errors in the culture. And I'd really like in this last segment, if we could, Father, talk to us a little bit about how Our Lady is, you finished last segment, Mother of the Church.
Yes.
But how can we understand that sort of typology or how she models what it means to be church?
Yes. All right. So let's start with the mistake that we have typically. And this is the sociological vision of the church. Vatican II is about, you know, kind of a redistribution of power. So you're going to take away from the Pope and
give it
power
to
the bishops.
Oh, the bishops. Oh, I thought the laity. I thought I was going to get my hands on it.
Yeah, and then we're going to take prestige away from the priests and give it to the bishops and the laity, right?
Right.
It's like, well, we're going to rearrange the chairs.
Okay, yeah.
And make sure, and the people who were not in the great seats are going to have better seats and all of that. And then the question comes, well, when are we going to give women a seat at the table? Because after all, the church is, it's just about those offices. Like, who can be the bishop, who can be the pope, who can be the priest? Now, and this is the thing that we ignore at our peril. All that stuff is said in Lumen Gentium, the dogmatic constitution of the church, and it's necessary to talk about the church's hierarchical structures, the universal call to holiness, religious life. But then it says, the end, the mystery of Mary is the type of the church. And they go back to some beautiful language. Irenaeus, the second and third century, Augustine and Ambrose, about the church's motherhood and the church's virginal motherhood. Mm-hmm. She gives birth, like Mary does, without corruption, without compromising the faith. Right? So this intimate relationship between Mary and the whole Blessed Trinity means that she gives birth to Christ, but she also gives birth to the members of the church. And if she gives birth to the body of Christ, and the church is the body of Christ, then Mary is mother of the church. So it's focusing on the church not as offices, not as structures, but as that intimate encounter between the ineffable God who comes into relationship with us and fills us with his life to the point where when we look at Mary, she is the image of the church, which is pure and spotless, united to God and totally engrossed in God's love, literally taken up to heaven by the force of God's love in her. So that is that's something that's important, because I do get the sense, and this is now being a priest after Vatican II, sometimes that we put way too much stock a lot of times in the typical, the pastor, first of all, and all the different structures in the parish. Whereas in the past, there was this huge room. Think of what made a parish run 50 years ago, 60 years ago. It was the sisters. They may not have had authority according to the code of canon law, but we know they made things happen, right? They made things happen.
Right.
And where did their authority come from? On paper?
Nope.
No. It came from that encounter with the Lord that they had, and people knew that they had that encounter with the Lord. It might have been backed up by a ruler, but that was common then, right?
Well, they brought that moral authority, right, by their personal witness to service to others, right?
They were
that
consecrated. Was so they were consecrated to the Lord.
Correct. And people knew it.
Yes.
And respected that. Yes. And admired that.
Yes.
And are attracted by that, right? And want to be around people like that.
And that's one of those gifts of femininity. And you see this if you're really paying attention to someone who's a woman who's trying to act like a woman. Women draw people to themselves. Mm-hmm. They allure people. And it's not just in terms of coupling, right? I want to kind of pull you in.
Yeah.
Pull you in. And that, I think, to the extent that the church has lost a sense of the alluring quality, so you use consecrated religious, beautiful churches that aren't just meeting spaces. These things really captivate souls, but it's not as if we say, "Well, I'm drawn to the church because of the Pope." Well, great, drawn to the church because of the Pope, but that's never been the strongest card we've played as Catholics. It's always been that receptivity for the divine. Mm. Like people say, "I want to experience that." You look at throughout the Middle Ages. Popes did some pretty crazy things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But the idea of that encounter with God, and some of the most powerful reformers, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Catherine of Siena. Why? Because they had that sense of the encounter with God. And why was that? Because Mary was being put forth as that highest example of what it means to be a Christian, what it means to be a human being, not to kind of scale up the offices in the church, but rather to live that unreserved yes to God's will, even to the foot of the cross.
What's the Father? What would you say the value is in men who are, say, listening now?
Yes.
In developing a relationship with the Blessed Virgin Mary to enter into a close relationship with our mother.
In an age saturated by pornography.
Oh, yeah, we didn't bring that up.
Nothing can help a man recognize the dignity of woman more than a relationship with Our Lady. This idea that, for instance, she's perpetually a virgin, going back to that whole thing with Joseph. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a minute. Joseph, it didn't even occur to him to want to consummate the marriage.
Right.
It just didn't see it. It wasn't a question. Right. It wasn't a question of, well, you know, I'd really like to, but no. How could I even dream of doing that?
Right.
And I think that that's obviously not where we are. We live in an age that is just carnal and concupiscent. But Mary allows us, contemplating our Lady and the Trinity's work in Our Lady, allows us to recognize the dignity of what it means, first of all, to be a human being. So males, we do fall into that category. But then the second thing is to be able to, like, this is, if this is my mother, and this is the prototype of what it means to be a Christian, but even to be a woman, then, wow, that means every woman is in some sense a reflection of that. So that can be, you know, praying the rosary, for example, and contemplating the beauty that Mary has, bodily beauty, not the kind of bodily beauty that we're going to see portrayed in, you know, billboards or on television or whatever, wherever else, but the beauty that comes from constantly being in God's grace. And the beauty of being a mother, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't see many depictions of motherhood, you know, in the mass media or the common culture. It's usually, you know, the really interesting stories do not involve a mother with a child. But the most interesting story, we believe, as Catholics, involves a mother with a child.
Right.
Even in heaven, that's the thing, right? The woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and the crown of 12 stars. That's what we'll be contemplating for all eternity. The Blessed Trinity, and then Mary crowned. So to start looking in that direction, it should change the way we relate to each other, relate to ourselves.
What? Thank you for that, Father. We're almost out of time here. Maybe if you would tell us a little bit about kind of what's in store for you. Sounds like you just took over a couple of parishes. So tell us, you know, what's going on with you over the next 6-12 months?
Well, I just the last 2 days I spent in Dayton in comprehensive examinations. So I was
that explains much.
Yes. I have all of this information right. in my head that I'm dumping.
Right.
So getting settled in two parishes, obviously. Grant County, Indiana is a wonderful field for evangelization, but some of it is trying to get to know my parishioners and then also praying and listening and getting a sense of where the Lord's calling us to go in proclamation of the gospel there. Trying to write in some of my spare time. So it's my plate's fairly full.
It sounds like it, and that's why we're so appreciative that you took the time to come into the Catholic Cave. We want to catch up with you down the road, you know, maybe several months down the road, and kind of see where you're at with finishing up your advanced degrees. And and the topic today is going to be with us forever, and especially at least in one sense, we always want to know more about the Blessed Virgin Mary, our mother, and how we can love and serve her evermore. But also, I think the toxicity of the culture, I think, is going to be with us for some time as well. And with your studies and your learned perspective, that's going to be very helpful for our listeners as ways in which we can navigate and maybe even help renew the culture.
Absolutely.
And that is all the time that we have for the Catholic Cave. Just want to leave you with this one thought. The last words of Mary in the Bible, referring to her son Jesus, do whatever he tells you. It's all about service. And that's all the time we have for today. Join us next time on the Catholic Cave. For Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, for Father Christopher Roberts, I'm Kent Blanford. Until next time, may God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to Kent at CatholicRadioIndy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.